you were not aware of this? Your posterior better contact someone at once!
Hey, good evening. Welcome to tonight's episode of Oh, You Didn't Know. I am JCD, John DiMaselli, and I am joined once again by Toph. Toph, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I hope everyone listening is having a great day.
Yeah, well, you know, nice day here in New York. Not too hot, not too cold. What about by you?
We just had a bunch of rain today. I think the news said there's going to be like a few tropical storms. You know, we just entered hurricane season, so it'll be raining for the rest of the week, but nothing serious, just a bunch of rain.
Okay. Thank God for that. All right. So we are, of course, Oh You Didn't Know Radio is brought to you by ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com and the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network. Check out Jay every Tuesday night with Will, Toph, and myself, 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. You could also check out the main site at ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, as well as the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Facebook page. No jerk-off guys claiming to have exclusives, just actual fans with actual opinions, point of views. And you know what? It doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on. Everyone has a right to their opinion. And you know what? No one treats each other any differently for agreeing or not agreeing with anyone's point of view. And you know what? At the end of the day, we're all fans, and that's the most important thing. With that said, thank you, everyone who's listening in tonight live on Blog Talk Radio, or if you're checking us out on either iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or Stitcher Radio, we thank you for listening whenever you listen. It is appreciated. Also, please check out the Blog Talk Radio Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. I'm sorry, not Blog Talk Radio. Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Amazon store. You know, every little bit helps on anything that you buy from there. So with that said, we got all the bills out of the way. Toph, you ready to go?
Yep, I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
Okay, so last week we started our Triple H career retrospective. We covered pretty much his brief run in WCW, and we made it all the way up to his 2001 injury, breaking down a lot of, you know, a lot of his stuff that he did in between. So we'll pick up at 2001 again. As we left off last week, we were right around the time when he suffered the quad injury in that tag team match on Raw, teaming with Stone Cold Steve Austin in defending the tag team titles against Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit. As we covered last week, he tore the quad and actually finished the match and took, I believe he took the Walls of Jericho at one point, right?
Yeah, he worked the match anyway, and he did take the Walls of Jericho. And thank you for explaining who the tag team was, because a lot of younger fans, they know that Triple H tore his quad. They always mention that in his promos, but they never really mention who was in the match, you know, probably because Benoit was in it. But, yeah, it was a tag team match. He was part of the two-man power trip. And we'll never really know, you know, the potential of that particular faction. It seemed like tension was being teased, but we'll never know. And, you know, so much stuff was going on because of the whole invasion thing going on. We'll never know. That whole thing is just, you know, it's just one of those things. We'll just never know how things went. So.
Right, and I was actually going to ask you about that. You know, the dissension was being teased for a little bit. Actually, the night before that tag match on Raw was actually the Judgment Day pay-per-view, and Triple H actually dropped the IC title to Kane on that show due to botched interference from Austin. I was always of the mindset that Triple H Austin, either at SummerSlam or Survivor Series, was the end game. Obviously, this was before everything that happened with the invasion, and I still don't know where Triple H would stand in the whole invasion angle, mainly because of the fact that you knew at some point you had The Rock coming back. Do you have any thoughts on where you thought maybe Hunter would have fell and everything?
It's really hard to say. It's like flipping a coin, really, because on one hand, you have the whole he's WWF at that point, so you could use that as an excuse to make him the main babyface. But at the same time, they had Shane and Stephanie, you know, as part of the alliance, and, you know, Triple H had his relationship with her on screen at the time. So it really could have gone either way. But I think things worked out. I think it was better off he wasn't in the invasion. I mean, granted, I don't like the invasion anyway. That's one of my best, like, my least favorite angle ever in the history of wrestling. But if I had to guess, I probably would have guessed maybe Triple H would have been a babyface. That's what my gut is telling me, because they were pretty serious on making Austin heel, even though it didn't work.
Right, yeah, especially twice. I don't, you know, the heel turn didn't work after WrestleMania, and it didn't even work in the Alliance. The one wild card in all that, to me, always has been the fact of The Rock. Like, you know, Rock had to get his revenge on Austin for WrestleMania, so I really always wondered where Hunter would have gone. You know, in all that. I wonder if maybe if Hunter stayed face and Rock was going to obviously work Austin, I wonder if Hunter then would have worked whoever the second-tier heel of the Alliance under Austin would have been, whether it was Booker T or Rob Van Dam or Kurt Angle. So, but like you said, we'll never know. And, you know, it's one of those things that maybe we're better off never knowing about.
Yeah, definitely agreed.
Okay, so now 2002. I mean, the obvious is the big pop at the Garden. I've been at the Garden for many events, and when they say that nothing has ever come close at the Garden to that, it's true. you know, anything really 2002, early 2002, I should say, that, you know, really jumps out at you?
Well, another thing you got to consider is, at this point, wrestling fans, I think as a whole, were still kind of joined together as one. Like, at that point, even though WCW and ECW had already gone under, you know, at the time, they were still attempting to kind of, they were like in the early processes of starting the draft thing. I guess the point I'm making is, even though at a certain point, WWE, they stopped catering to WCW fans and ECW fans, and when that happened, those fans kind of went elsewhere. They stopped watching wrestling entirely, or they started watching other products to get their fill. But at that point, in that early 02 period, those fans were still there, so the wrestling crowd was still much bigger. And at this point, it was really before Triple H did any of the political stuff. I mean, he was a hard worker. People forget, Triple H was well on the way to a main event push, even before the Stephanie, you know, stuff. I mean, they were grooming him well. We talked about it in our last show, where when he came back, that he just completely skipped the IC belt and just got pushed immediately into world title, you know, contention. So, you know, fans liked him. He got consistent good pops. You know, he's just, you know, if Rock or Austin weren't the top guy, he was. So he was over at the
right
time. Fans forget that.
Right, right. And, you know, it's funny. I'm glad you mentioned that whole thing about not having any of the political pull. You know, you're 100% right. I mean, he was involved with Stephanie at that point. But as far as, you know, having the major stroke, and he really didn't have it at that point still. You know, and he... Don't worry, we'll get to this. He did more than his fair share to alienate those ECW fans and WCW fans. We'll get to that in the next couple of minutes. real quick, though, I just want to put it out there. If you feel like joining in on the conversation tonight, you can call in at 1-760-888-5749 is the number. You know, call, we'll get you right on. You know, feel free to join in on the Triple H conversation. Now, the reason why I said the first early part of 02 is because he wins the Royal Rumble, goes on to WrestleMania in a terrible feud with Chris Jericho for the WrestleMania part of it, and wins the Undisputed World title. I was assuming, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but we would probably be in agreement that the WrestleMania Undisputed Championship build-up and feud with Jericho was complete garbage.
Oh, yeah, Jericho said it himself. I forgot where I think I read it somewhere, or it could have been a video. I believe I read it, but Jericho went into great detail and And basically, he was informed he couldn't do anything. He said it reminded him of being back in WCW. He had all types of heelish ideas for Stephanie. Like, there was actually one idea. There was supposed to be, like, a match, like Triple H versus Stone Cold or something. And then Jericho would, like, interfere and take them both out. And then Stephanie and Jericho were supposed to pose over his body and, like, make out and kiss. Like, similar to what we would see with Christian and Trish Stratus at WrestleMania 20, but they gave Jericho the red flag, and they were like, you can't do this with Steph, you can't do that with Steph. Jericho said that the man Vince himself was very adamant about what Stephanie could and couldn't do, and basically, according to what Jericho said, he didn't really have any creative pull, and he was booked to look like a loser. You know, Stephanie had to, even though Jericho was the champion, Stephanie was the one pulling the strings. And, you know, the crazy thing was in main event at WrestleMania X8 or 18, and the reason is because Vince McMahon had the philosophy that the world title must main event, nothing is more important, and ironically, 10 years later, we would get the complete opposite at WrestleMania 28, but let's not get off topic
right
here.
Right, and yeah, I mean, Jericho was made to look exactly as you said, he was secondary. It was more like that feud was about the breakup of Hunter and Stephanie. And, oh, by the way, Chris Jericho was here with two championship belts.
Yeah, it was really bad. I really felt sorry for him because the NWO had just resurfaced. You had Stone Cold, as always, and The Rock, Hogan. Yeah, Jericho was just a total. That first title reign was just it was a joke. I forget that reign.
Right. And the reason why I say that feud was terrible, because later on when they would circle back at Judgment Day, the build-up to the Hell in the Cell match and the story they told was just a complete 180 and so much better than the WrestleMania build-up. And you would never think that comparing WrestleMania to a secondary pay-per-view.
Yeah, I definitely agree there.
Yep. Now, here's, you know, I jumped to Judgment Day, but we'll go real quick back to Backlash. One common, I guess, myth is that the WWE, I guess, went into let's ride the hot card in Hulk Hogan and put the belt on him, and Hogan defeats Triple H at Backlash, wins the title.
To the fuck, by the way. Yeah.
Yes. You had Jericho interfere. You had Undertaker interfere. Yeah. But what a lot of people don't maybe not realize is Hogan defeating Triple H was always on the table. You know, the original NWO and Hogan plans for 02 had Hogan running through the same matches that he did in the WrestleMania and Backlash and Judgment Day and so on, just a little bit different results, but Hogan was always slated to go over Triple H at Backlash. That was never a trigger decision and anything like that. So that's something.
And another thing
fans
need to realize is, you know, Triple H, he's, you know, because of his political pull now, fans forget that he, too, was also screwed over. I mean, you got to think about this from Triple H's point of view. You know, he's getting the push of his life, and then he tears his quad. He's gone for the entire invasion angle. You know, he gets an injury that's nearly impossible to come back from. He comes back, gets the biggest pop of his career, is really hot, finally wins the world title, and then he drops it like a month later. Hulk Hogan of all people, you know, I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, people complain when folks like Christian or Dolph Ziggler or Rey Mysterio, when they get screwed out of their reigns, and granted what happened to them was wrong too, and they say, oh, Triple H never had to go through that. He did it, actually.
He did.
Came back, won the belt, and he got screwed over by Hogan. Granted, it's Hogan. Yeah, so, yeah, Triple H got screwed too.
Know.
Even he's been there.
Yeah. So exactly, you know, but that was always the plan. There's been a lot of people that seem to think that, oh, they pulled the trigger on the hot card. No, that was always the plan. It was just never really planned for Hogan to be a face doing it. Summer 2002, Undertaker, flirting with the NWO, Vengeance, anything of those really jump out?
No, not really. I just remember, it's just a blur. All I remember about 2002 was when HBK came back, and that was pretty much it.
Okay, and that's where we're going now. HBK comes back. gets Hunter to join him on Raw after teasing that he was going to get him to join the NWO. NWO disbands. Hunter turns on Michaels the night after on Raw because Michaels didn't want to be his manager and sets up an amazing street fight at SummerSlam 02.
That's SummerSlam all time. Okay.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I was at that. That card was at Nassau Coliseum. Let me tell you something. That crowd was hot in the parking lot at about 5 o'clock. And
weakest match on the card was Flair Jericho, and it wasn't even that the match was bad. It just didn't have much build up, but the match itself was still great. But
yeah,
best summer ever.
Yeah, every match on that card had something behind it, and nothing was really thrown together. Yeah, we could do SummerSlam 02 for 2 hours another night. And on top of that, that was probably the third incarnation of what that card was supposed to be. That's the funny part. So, Michaels, he wrestles the match with Michaels, street fight. Michaels goes over. And to be honest with you, no one really knew where Michaels was headed there. That could have really been Triple H doing, you know, HBK a favor. We didn't really know where he was headed. And then we go 8 days later, and probably one of the worst moments that I could think of. Apparently, once Brock Lesnar goes to SmackDown, Triple H decides he's above the Intercontinental title, which was the original plan, was to make the IC title the number one title on Raw. And he didn't like it, and out came Eric Bischoff with the big gold belt, and he was awarded the first World Heavyweight Championship on Raw, and later that night, of all people, defeats Ric Flair.
Yeah, this is where it begins. If you want to start hating on Triple H, you'd start here. This is where the infamous Reign of Terror, as they call on the IWC, and for good reason, occurred. To make a long story short, what JCD says is pretty accurate. They were trying to put prestige to the Intercontinental Championship, which I give WWE credit for. They wanted to put prestige in it, but Triple H, he was the one that said, no, I don't want to do that, and they gave him a world title. Now, in thesis, it makes sense because, you know, what better way to gain heat than to just be awarded a world title? Like, you know, what did you do to win it? So on that note, it sounds like it makes sense, but at the same time, though, the Raw roster was full of guys that were getting consistent pops despite really bad booking, particularly Booker T and RVD. They were really hot that year, RVD especially. And, you know, Triple H was just awarded the world title. He did not want to work with Brock Lesnar, which would have been a great match then, not in 2013, but that's not a debate or a rant for another day. And, yeah, it began the Reign of Terror. And, of course, he beat Ric Flair, who's pretty much synonymous with that title. So, yeah. Oh, what's next, JCD? Hello? Is JCD there?
Yeah, sorry about that, Tuff. Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay.
That began the, like you said, the Reign of Terror. Destroyed guys like RVD, Bubba Ray Dudley, Helms, Dreamer on some Raws. I'm not even going to get into Katie Vick. I'm sure we're all better off without getting into that.
Yeah.
And then Survivor Series 02 happens. The first Elimination Chamber gives the belts back to Michaels. They feud. They rematch at Armageddon, Three Stages of Hell. Wins the title back from Michaels. And it is at this point on Raw the night after that we begin the year-long burial of WCW.
Yeah, so just to sum this up, because we could just rant about this for like 3 to 5 hours. To sum this up, basically, at this point from like late 2002, give or take, to about maybe, depending on how you look at it, from about late 04, early 05, from pretty much that whole stretch, Triple H proceeds to only put over his friends, a.k.a. Click. He puts over his friends, meaning he only loses to his friends, or his friends get a rub. He had so many matches with Shawn Michaels. Like, a lot of people like to talk about their match at Bad Blood. Hell in a Cell, I think it went almost over an hour. Yeah, it was a great match, but Triple H and HBK had had so many matches to the point where I really didn't care at that point. You know, Triple H could have easily have dropped the belt to a person that was over, like Booker T or RVD, but instead he dropped to Shawn Michaels. He had a match with Kevin Nash, of all people, who at that point just did not deserve a push at that point. Randy Orton, you know, would later join in Evolution. And, you know, Orton, he looked good because he was near Triple H. Batista looked good. Flair looked good. Every single person Triple H fought, he beat. Booker T lost. RVD lost. You know, everybody from WCW and ECW lost. It was almost as if Triple H was making up for lost time, like he wasn't a part of the Invasion era. So anyone from WCW and ECW got buried, which makes no sense because Kane got buried for no reason. The only person that beat him was Benoit. And to this day, I'll never figure out why. Like, was that part of the plan? Like, did they really decide to just push Benoit? That's, like, the question I'll never know.
The Benoit one was the most, the one, and yeah, we're going to circle back to 2003 because there's one feud and one incident particular that just, if it sums up the douchebaggery, it will be this, but we'll get to that in a second. The Benoit thing always was a pleasant surprise because it got out that Backlash was going to be in Calgary, was going to be in Edmonton, you know, where Benoit was from. So I went to WrestleMania 20 at the Garden, and the guys, everyone who I went with, we all went with the mindset that Triple H was going to retain at Mania, and then Benoit would beat him in Edmonton. And when that didn't happen, it was like, whoa. And it was like, then we started with the fear that, okay, he's going to beat Benoit in Canada. That son of a bitch is going to beat him in Canada, of all places. And he didn't. And then they had, I think they had an Iron Man match on Raw, and they had another match at, I think, Vengeance, and he just never beat Benoit. And
yeah,
it still
we'll never know. Yeah, we'll never know. We don't know what Benoit had on him. We don't know if it was a personal thing or if Triple H just personally liked his work ethic, but for whatever, because the weird thing, what pissed me off the most about Benoit was Triple H dropped the belt to Benoit, and then Benoit dropped it to Orton, and so then Orton and Triple H began the feud, and it's like, well, wait a minute, you never did beat Benoit, and so it was like once he got the belt back from Orton, they just pretty much dismissed the whole Benoit thing, and he just kind of got de-pushed back to like your upper mid-carder.
He beat Benoit on a Raw.
Yeah, but never for the title though.
Right. But he did beat Benoit on a Raw. It was during that whole stretch where, like, Benoit, Edge, Michaels, and Hunter, and Orton were all going for the world title.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that...
Right, I remember that. Wasn't that like a Survivor Series stipulation or something like that, one of their matches?
No. The Survivor Series 04 stipulation was the winning team got to run Raw for a month.
Right, and if the heel team won, then they would have won a title shot.
Yeah, and I think everyone who ran Raw on the face side, because they won, I think they all took title shots, and then something happened in a triple threat. They actually had Edge, Benoit, and Triple H on a triple threat on Raw at the end of 04, and Triple H, somehow he ended up not in the fall, and that's when the title went vacant, heading into the first like New Year's Revolution and the Elimination Chamber match in 05.
Right.
Yeah,
and,
but
yeah, and to backtrack some, because we're going over everything as quickly as we can. The most infamous feud that Triple H has, you know, to this day, fans are still upset about it, is of course the infamous feud between Triple H and Booker T at WrestleMania 19. Booker T won Battle Royale for his number one contendership. To challenge for the World Heavyweight Championship, and he eliminated The Rock. And this is something very minimal, something very small, but when Booker T eliminated The Rock actually applauded Booker,
yep.
Which I thought was great because that was The Rock putting Booker over. It was very short.
Yeah.
It was very sweet, you know, like, yep. You know, it's something very rare you hardly see in wrestling
yeah.
anymore. So The Rock, he knew that he was on his way out. So he figured
yep.
if he's on his way out, the least he can do is put people over. The Rock put
yep.
Booker T over more in that battle royale than Triple H could his entire career. So once
yeah.
Booker won, there is the infamous promo where, like, the very next week, Booker came out and cut a promo. Not even 2 minutes into it, Triple H came out and basically buried him in WCW. What I'll never understand is that they won the war. WCW's dead, so why even, you know, continue to make jokes about it? Triple H was just saying stuff like, oh, you were champ there, it's a joke. You know, David Arquette was a champ, it's a joke. You know, people like you can't be a world champion, you know, kind of get off a little racism angle. I get where they were going. They were trying to do the whole, they were trying to repeat the Harley Race, Vader, Ron Simmons thing, you know, for you older fans. That's what they were trying to do. But the thing was, is that when you're a heel and when you do racist stuff like that, there needs to be some type of contribution at the end. The heel needs to get what's coming to him. And, you know, they had their match at WrestleMania 19, and Booker hit Triple H with everything. He even pulled out the Harlem Hangover, a move that he didn't even use. That was like his regular finisher in WCW, but he never even used that in WWE. He hit him with the Harlem Hangover, the bookend, I mean, everything, and Triple H kicked out. Triple H hits him with a pedigree, and there's like a 15 to 20 second stall,
yep.
and he still
yep.
pins him.
Yep.
It was ridiculous.
Yep.
I mean, so what
yeah.
does this lesson teach us? I mean, not only
yeah.
did it bury WCW. This isn't me being angry because I'm a WCW fan. I'm angry mostly because of the whole racist thing, because when a racist, even if it's an angle, because we know it's not real, but when
right.
you're doing this type of angle, there needs to be backlash. When you have these stories, the villain always gets what's coming to him, and that never
exactly.
happened to Triple H. You
exactly.
know? And the worst part was every single person Triple H beat Booker T, RVD, Kane. Once they were beaten, all of them just went right back to the mid card. And then by the time they finally won the world titles, it didn't mean anything because
it didn't mean anything. Yeah.
Yeah, because their
know,
hot
it started
days were
with
gone.
Steiner.
Yeah,
it,
we totally forgot Steiner.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. That's where I was. That's the feud that started the night after Armageddon, and they put on two brutal matches. Two brutal matches at the Royal Rumble. And at No Way Out. The ironic part is about No Way Out. The Raw before No Way Out, it was Booker T and Steiner against Triple H and I think Flair, because Orton and Batista were injured. Booker T pins Hunter. So it was like, well, wait a second. Steiner's the guy getting the shot on Sunday, but you
yeah.
have a guy who we didn't know where Booker was going at the time, who's just your partner because it's cool because, oh, wow, look at these two guys. He pins Triple H. excuse me. Like, Hunter wouldn't even make Steiner look good going into the pay-per-view.
Dale Steiner was, say what you want about Steiner. You know, fans joke about him and you know, do steroid jokes, whatever. Steiner was one of them. WCW was pretty bad in his final days, but if you were to watch WCW, Steiner was one of the main reasons, too. When he went heel and joined the NWO and when he repackaged himself as Big Papa Pump, you newer kids think that the pipe bomb promos that CM Punk cut is cool. Scott Steiner used to do promos like that every week, like it wasn't a big deal. He was great on the mic, outstanding on the mic. He's hilarious. And he had a huge reputation. Even WWF fans that despised WCW, they loved Scott Steiner, because I always
yep.
remember the Raw right before WCW got purchased, Vince McMahon came out, and to kind of test the waves to see who was over, he would be like, what about Booker T? What about Goldberg? What
yeah,
about Buff Bagwell?
Yeah, that was Bagwell? The night he bought,
yeah.
The night he bought Nitro, and he cut that promo. Yeah, do you guys want to see Sting? Do you want to see, you know, Buff? Yeah, he did that,
And when he said Steiner's name, the whole crowd just went apeshit. They love Steiner.
Yep.
And go back and look at his debut at Survivor Series 2002. Those fans went nuts. They loved Steiner.
Yep.
The story
the
is...
went ballistic.
Yeah, the story is that Triple H was intimidated by Steiner, and I don't know if this is true or not, but the urban legend on the street is that Triple H wanted Steiner to get tested for steroids, and Steiner said that he was cool with this as long as Triple H himself would also be tested.
Yeah.
And at that point, Triple H just kind of dropped it. And so, he wouldn't make Steiner look good in their matches or in their promos. So what they did to build up their feud was very interesting. You know, actually, what Mark Henry and Sheamus did kind of reminded me of that. They would have, like, arm wrestling competitions and
yep.
and pose-offs. You know, very innovative ways to build up to a match.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, we'll never know the story behind that.
Yeah,
so.
I've heard something like that, that certain things were kind of implied, and when Steiner turned around and said, well, all right, well, man up as well, Hunter was like, eh, all right, yeah, let's go over here. yeah, and one of the most infamous, more so than the Booker T feud, because Booker T and Hunter actually had an amazing match on Raw, like 2 weeks after WrestleMania, that it was like, where was this in Seattle? They had a great match on Raw. I think Michaels was the referee, and I, you know, they you know, it was a shame because it showed that when Hunter cared, you know, Hunter still, you forget how good he is in the ring.
When he cares.
Yeah. And speaking of time when Hunter definitely didn't care, then there was the night in June when Hunter met Goldberg.
Oh, no.
And the
yeah.
clusterfuck of SummerSlam 03.
Oh, not that match.
Originally supposed to be Hunter Goldberg. Hunter apparently tears his groin, gets fat, decides to wear spandex shorts, and next thing you know, we got an Elimination Chamber match. Goldberg, I think he eliminated like three guys.
Goldberg
and
was
then
a monster. He killed everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, so Triple H is injured, guys. He's injured. He had like a growing injury, shouldn't be holding the belt. Like you said, the attire he was wearing that night was attire that the attire he was wearing is not something you would see somebody wrestle in. So just from what he was wearing, you could tell that he was not going to have too much action. I believe the match was Goldberg, Triple H, Kevin Nash, HBK, Jericho, and Orton. That was it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
guys.
The match goes
yeah.
normally. The match goes normally, and like Kevin Nash is eliminated. I forgot who eliminated him. And Michaels, right. And then once he's eliminated, Nash goes crazy and he powerbombs people. And then Goldberg's released from the chamber. And Goldberg, he pretty much does what chamber matches are missing now. Chamber matches miss that monster that just kills people, with the exception of Mark Henry, because, you know, Hall of Fame
right.
is cool. So Goldberg comes out. He kills everybody. He just destroys Michaels, destroys Jericho, destroys Orton. And, you know, Triple H is by himself. You're like, there's no way he's getting out of this. And so then Ric Flair gives him a sledgy. Goldberg goes for a spear. He gets hit the sledgehammer. 1, 2, 3 is over. Triple H retains, even though he's injured, and it makes no sense. He ends up dropping the belt to Goldberg a month later, which is all well and good. But what I hate the most about Triple H, and he's done this consistently, particularly at WrestleMania, is at the big show, he'll go over, but then at the smaller show, he'll job.
He'll drop
the like,
belt. Yep.
Yeah, and it's like, if you job at the smaller show, it doesn't mean as much. Like, he went over Sheamus at WrestleMania 26, but then he put him over at Extreme Rules.
Extreme Rules,
He went over Orton at WrestleMania 25, but then
Backlash.
Yeah, he does that a lot, where it's like he'll win at the big show, but then at the minor show, he'll job. I hate that.
Yep.
And he just did it again to Brock Lesnar, where he went over Lesnar at WrestleMania 29, and then he'll lose at the smaller show, where it doesn't mean as much. That's what I hate the most about Triple H. The only exception to this is John Cena, and for whatever reason, Benoit. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. And here's a little legend on the urban legend on the Triple H Goldberg scenario. Goldberg carries the belt from Unforgiven into Armageddon, which was originally supposed to just be Goldberg Kane. And then, like, the week of, Hunter inserts himself into the main event. Now, Goldberg's contract at the time was basically a TNA contract the way it is now, where it was done by number of appearances, kind of like the same deal that Lesnar has now. Goldberg, if you watch everything on TV from the night Goldberg debuted after WrestleMania up to and including the Raw before Armageddon, Goldberg was on that show consistently. He never once counted dates. The story is, Hunter beats Goldberg. Well, yeah, Kane chokeslams Goldberg. Hunter throws Kane out of the ring. Hunter pins Goldberg, wins the title. The show goes off the air with Hunter trash-talking Goldberg, which is fine. It's a heel move. The problem is it continued backstage, and Hunter says something along the lines to Goldberg, like, hey, Bill, you see this big belt? You'll never see it again. And at that point, that's when Goldberg starts counting dates. That's why Goldberg did, like, the Raw the night after Armageddon, the Royal Rumble, the Raw the night after the Royal Rumble, and somehow got suspended by Vince on air, and then did, like, one appearance leading into No Way Out, No Way Out, and WrestleMania. He did six appearances in 2004. Why? Because Hunter ran his mouth. And you know what? That's when Goldberg turned around and said, you know what? I wasn't counting dates, but now, screw you. This is what I got left, because he didn't know when to shut his mouth.
Yeah, you know, to sum up Triple H's career in a short, because, like, pretty much, like, after around, like, after 05 to 06, he toned down considerably, really.
We're gonna kind of jump into 05, because you covered 04 pretty good, you know, with Benoit and Orton. I mean, he did kind of help make Eugene a star. We'll give him credit for that.
He put Jeff Hardy in some strange way. People debate whether or not he put MVP over of that weird losing streak. But
we'll get into the later 2000s. But 2004, you know, you kind of nailed a few minutes ago. We'll get into 05 because I think 05 is a little surprising, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think
the main fault that I always give Triple H is, you know, each era has its faces. You think of the New Generation era as Hogan, Savage, Andre. Well, no, I'm sorry. I said New Generation. I mean the Golden Era, you know, Hulkamania eras, you know, Steamboat, Hogan, Savage, New Generation, HBK, Brett, Taker, Attitude Era, Rock, Austin. And I think what always bothers Triple H and still bothers him to this day is when fans think of the Attitude Era, they don't really think of Triple H. They think of DX in general. They may think of
but
HBK.
Not individually.
Yeah, not individually. Triple H was never truly, as much as WWE tries to promote him, as much as they try to push him, Triple H was never truly the top guy of any era. And whenever he was on top, it was always through association. Like the McMahon-Helmsley era, Evolution, DX.
Yep.
He was never really the top guy by himself. Triple H is like that third wheel. Like you have a bicycle, a really good bike, Rock's the front wheel, Steve Austin's the back wheel, and Triple H is that spare wheel just in case one of the first two tires don't work. And I think that's always bothered Triple H, and that's why I feel like he continually has these matches, he continually cuts these promos. You know, it's like he's trying to prove to himself and to the fans that he's just as important as Rock and Austin.
Those guys.
Yeah, that's what I feel about Triple H.
He's still standing, he's still doing it after those guys have pretty much
have long since stopped, yeah.
Yeah.
I would respect him more if he stopped, to be honest, but yeah.
Well, We'll circle up to where he is right now in a few moments. You know, we'll get there. But yeah. Oh, so we covered 04, more or less in a nutshell. 05 was a weird year for him because, except for like Survivor Series, he didn't win on a pay per view after New Year's Revolution.
Yeah, that was a strange year for him.
He lost to Batista three times. And then he lost to Flair at Cyber Sunday.
Yep.
You know, so 05, you know, it becomes obvious, though, that he's going to be the guy for John Cena at WrestleMania. Of course, there's the infamous backstage incident with RVD. RVD, for those who don't know, had just returned in January of that year from a knee injury. And Triple H supposedly goes up to him. Hey, buddy, how you been? Haven't seen you in a while. How's everything? How are you? And Van Damme pretty much responded to him point blank in the face. You know damn well how I've been. You've been burying me for the last 8 months since I've been gone. And you know what? The words were true. You know. So.
Yeah, that's true. And as far as the end of his heel turn goes, because some fans might want to know, at WrestleMania 22, he did fight John Cena.
And some fans try to compare it to Bret and Austin, but not really. John Cena, that was kind of the point. This is like his own podcast in itself. But around WrestleMania 22 was that was around the time when they turned Cena face. Everything that made Cena likable to begin with was becoming more and more. When he first went to Raw, you could see that he was becoming less edgy and was slowly turning into the Cena that we know today. It was becoming more.
Right, he put that weird promo on Jericho where he called Jericho cheap heading into their match at SummerSlam, and no one knew what the hell Cena was talking about.
Yeah. He was losing it, and Boston, they're huge wrestling fans, and so it was basically that was the catalyst that really turned Cena into who he is now. And so when he had his match with Triple H, they were completely, to be fair, they booed all the faces that night. They booed Ray. They even booed Trish Stratus against Mickey. But they wanted nothing to do with John Cena, and they were completely cheering Triple H as if he was like a god. And after that match happened, they kind of silently turned him babyface. And really, since then, he hasn't ever been a heel. The fans just sort of kind of cheered for him, and it just kind of stuck. So I wouldn't call it a double turn, because Cena still stayed
Cena
face.
No, Cena didn't turn, yeah.
Yeah, but at that point, the IWC no longer embraced, what was left of them. They didn't embrace Cena.
Yep, I remember that crowd very vividly watching that pay-per-view, and the chants at Cena that night were brutal. Hunter turns face shortly after Backlash, reforms DX with Shawn Michaels, and if there was ever another just failure to build anybody new, it was like the six or seven matches they had 5-on-2 with the Spirit Squad, and they never lost to them.
That was a really bad time. They reformed DX, and it wasn't good. The best part about it was in TNA, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn were doing a parody of that, and that was really the best part. And DX. Yeah.
One thing that gets lost in that feud with the Spirit Squad, though, was quietly Triple H and Michaels quietly put over Umaga, though, on back-to-back Raws that summer. So, while they weren't really helping the Spirit Squad, they were helping Umaga get over as this monster heel. And that kind of gets lost in the shuffle, as to that whole feud with the Spirit Squad and the McMahons and the Big Show and the Hell in a Cell match at Unforgiven. They did put Umaga over, and everyone also never seems to really remember they lost to Edge and Orton at Cyber Sunday that year as well.
Well, it's not that fans don't remember. It's just they remember when that team got completely squashed at Survivor Series. So
for every
right, there's a wrong later. IWC logic, so.
Yeah. Oh, that Survivor Series team.
We're talking about that's also the night CM Punk had his first big break, and that was the moment where when HBK and Triple H were trying to do their DX stick, the crowd kept chanting CM Punk. They really, because they were in Chicago, right?
No, they were in Philly.
Philly? Okay, well, it was close to Chicago. And Punk was from ECW, and Philly is an ECW brand. So they were into Punk, and it didn't necessarily undermine DX, but you could tell Triple H was uncomfortable because HBK seemed cool. So I don't think he cared because he was just dancing around. But Triple H was trying to cut his DX promo where he's like, "Are you ready?" in his voice, and the crowd just kept chanting CM Punk. And I think that was really the beginning of WWE trying to undermine Punk. I don't think they liked that. Not that it was Punk's fault. It's not his fault he's over in Philly.
And Punk actually mentioned that later on in 2011 during his feud with Hunter.
Yeah.
He would reference that. So we have the horror of Survivor Series 06. Then we go into, again, another quad injury at New Year's Revolution. Takes him out of WrestleMania, which was rumored to be the rematch with him and John Cena, where he would beat Cena finally for the title. That obviously didn't happen. He returns at SummerSlam and pretty much signals the end of Booker T and the WWF. And poor Booker, you know, again, in the second, probably the biggest run of his career, even bigger than the WrestleMania 19 run, and lo and behold, here comes Hunter again to ruin it.
Yeah, you know, that's why some people think he's racist, because he never put Booker over once.
Yeah.
Well, now it wouldn't have mattered anyway, so.
Bounced back and forth between little mini feuds with Carlito, Umaga. Then we get to No Mercy 07, and I don't think this was Hunter's fault. I know a lot of people tend to, you know, blame Hunter for what happened, but it really was a case where they really had nothing to do. That was when John Cena tore his pec, and they awarded the belt to Orton, but then he wrestled Triple H in the first match of the show, and Hunter beat him for the title, and then Hunter wrestled Umaga like he was scheduled to do and beat Umaga, and then dropped the title back to Orton later that night. I never looked at that as Hunter ruining that show. I always looked at that as more of just trying to scramble to make the best of a really shitty situation. Where do you stand on the whole No Mercy 07 debacle?
No, the same thing pretty much what you said. I wouldn't blame him. It wasn't his fault. I mean, if Cena wasn't injured, it would have been a completely different story. But
yeah.
since you brought it up, next to Booker, Randy Orton's another person that Triple H has always seemed to screw over. People look at, I remember when Randy Orton was really hot in 04, and when Cena was starting to get corny, people looked at Orton, they're going to be like, Orton's going to be the Bret to Cena's HBK. He's going to be the Savage to Cena's Hogan. People kept saying Orton was going to be a big star, and he is, but if you compare Cena to Orton, it's just no comparison on who's the bigger star, and Triple H is to blame for that, because every single time they could have pulled the trigger and made Orton the top star, Triple H was there to make sure that didn't happen. So instead of blaming Orton, I blame Triple H. I mean, I don't even like Orton anyway. I could care less about him. But I'm not going to – how I feel about a wrestler is irrelevant when it comes to when it's their time and when they're over. And Orton, you know, that IED run in 09 when he was crazy or whatever, the whole I got voices in my head crap. And, you know, when he beat Benoit, like those two consecutive times, he was over. The fans were into him, and Triple H ruined it both times. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so 07, Hunter does not win the Rumble in 08 as he was more or less expected to. I was at the Garden for that and never expected Super Cena to show up that night. But somehow works his way into the WrestleMania 24 main event, wins the title at Backlash that year, and then goes to SmackDown with the belt. And this is when I feel, getting past the Great Khali feud at SummerSlam 08, this is when I actually feel things started to take a little bit of a turn with him. As he started working with guys like Jeff Hardy, oh, wait, before I forget, he had a terrible match with Edge at the Great American Bash that year. That feud could have been so money, and he just killed.
The story that I've heard is that he didn't like Edge.
I don't know what the deal was with it.
I don't know if it's true or not, but I've heard that ever since the whole Matt Hardy Lita thing. I've seen on several different shoot interviews from like different wrestlers from around them when they worked. Many of them said that Triple H, for whatever reason, just didn't like Edge. They couldn't recall a particular event. Like, did they have a disagreement or what? I don't know. So maybe I'm sure they respect each other, but.
Right.
I've just seen many wrestlers on different, you know, like RF video shoots and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen several people on the roster just say that they had the suspicion that Triple H just didn't like Edge. So I don't know.
It's possible. I was at Nassau Coliseum for that show, and what that match could have been versus what it was is just, it was very disappointing, very heartbreaking. And then we get into the fall. He starts working with Kozloff, Jeff Hardy, and you know, we come to Survivor Series, Edge wins back the title, but yet we go to Armageddon, and he actually takes the pin that lets Jeff Hardy become champion.
True.
They had a good match at No Mercy. I think they had another good match at Cyber Sunday. So, yeah, you know what? He did have a hand in Jeff Hardy, I think.
He did. I mean, he didn't take the pin at WrestleMania 24, so I give him that. He took the pin for Hardy. He didn't have to do that,
yeah.
But he did.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we go to 09, which, yeah, WrestleMania 25.
Yeah,
Steph
I mean,
that Orton was just.
Yeah, that show was horrible, to be fair.
Yeah.
You know, they shouldn't have, you know, HBK and Taker, they really killed that crowd. You know, WrestleMania 20 learned their lesson, and they had to finish the show. But Randy Orton has said himself that that's his worst, that's his least favorite match, because he said that there was nothing that they could do. Because when you have, as a matter of fact, I think there was an interview or that just got leaked earlier today.
I was just gonna ask you. Did you read the interview that came out today with him, where he
talked about that? Yeah, yeah. He said stuff in the interview like, you know, you have HBK kicking out of Tombstones and Taker kicking out of Super Kicks. It's like it's really hard to top that. And Orton feels like that maybe if the title match was like in the middle of the card. But as they say, the title must close the show, even though WrestleMania 28 disagrees. But and then he drops the belt, I think, in a six-man tag. That was so weak. Oh, man.
Yeah, well, even 26, the title didn't close the show. Michaels and...
But he learned their lesson
Michaels,
that year because they didn't follow that.
Yeah, he loses the title in the six-man at, again, your favorite pay-per-view, the one after the big one. loses at Backlash, disappears for a little bit, comes back, and... pretty much reforms DX
again.
And, to destroy Young Stars again. This time it's Legacy. Although Legacy did get a win over them.
They did even though it was
very,
very, very carefully booked. To those that really care to know, it was in a Hell in a Cell. And was it Hell in a Cell?
No, it was a submission match.
It was a submission. I forgot what they did. They had, like, they trapped Triple H somewhere, and then it was, like, Cody put HBK in the figure four leg lock around the ring post, and Ted had on the Million Dollar Dream at the same time. I forgot what they did, Triple H. They took him out, like, backstage, and so it was HBK that tapped, not Triple H, so.
Right.
I remember this different. It was neat, I guess.
Yeah. And then they lost at Bragging Rights as well, which was a shocker that they lost two pay-per-views in a row.
Yeah.
And then at Survivor Series, they lost the triple threat match to Cena. So that's actually three pay-per-views in a row.
Yeah.
And then we go to TLC, and they actually main evented TLC against Jericho for the tag titles. And
that was like a double negative. It's like it's a positive because the tag team titles are finally – you know, prestigious, but, it's prestigious because Triple H and HBK are holding them, so.
Yeah.
Or not holding them because they were going for them, but, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, he gets eliminated early in the Royal Rumble 2010, which everyone forgets that. I think Michaels came in, like, number 14 or something. Hunter was already in the
Michaels, I remember.
Michaels eliminated him early.
Yeah, it was very early. It wasn't even, they weren't even, like, halfway through,
To
be fair, Triple H had no story that year. I mean, they were building the whole HBK Taker 2 thing, and at that point, they hadn't established Triple H's feud with Sheamus. So Triple H had nothing going for him at that point.
Right,
so.
But Triple H also, see, they did something very good, though. They had Triple H tell Shawn, listen, I understand you want Taker, but I want to win the Rumble, too, and if I get a chance, I'm throwing you out. They actually played that well, that although Shawn was going in for Taker, Hunter still had an agenda to win the Rumble and get his title shot. So they actually told that story well to keep it up that, you know, it's you and me together, but if I get a chance, I'm throwing you out over the top, which is why Michaels, like, I think the second or third guy he eliminated was Triple H, and the mindset was, okay, I got rid of you. Now I can focus on this.
Yeah.
It was done well. Even though he had no, like, specific direction, they still kept him relevant enough to the point that you knew he still wanted to win the Rumble. In fact, I remember he closed the Raw one night when he kept trying to tell Shawn, you're not going to win the Rumble. You're not going to win the Rumble. And then finally, he ends the show, Shawn, I've been trying to tell you all night, you're not going to win the Rumble because I am. Even though he wasn't feuding, I think Cena was the WWE champion at the time. He wasn't feuding with Cena, but he still wanted that
the champion
shot.
Was.
Yeah. So,
After the Rumble, Elimination Chamber occurs, and Triple H, he eliminates Sheamus, but then Cena eliminates Triple H, and Cena wins, and then, you know, that whole angle with Batista and Bret and that, all that stuff happened.
Mm-hmm.
So Sheamus, you know, he couldn't do anything because, you know, he couldn't compare to Cena or Batista. So what they did was they had Sheamus feud with Triple H because Triple H was the one that pinned him. And what I did like about this feud is that Triple H told Sheamus, you know, you're just trying to pick on the big dog, trying to make a name for yourself. And he was like, you know, a long time ago I did the same thing, which he did because, you know, way back at WrestleMania 12, he fought the Ultimate Warrior and he was squashed. So I was really happy they actually mentioned that. That happened so many years ago. But Triple H was basically warning Sheamus, if you try to fight me, the same thing is going to happen to you. I didn't mind the feud. Of course, at the time, many people didn't like it because there were rumors speculating that Sheamus and Triple H were workout buddies, a.k.a. Click. And so that was the main reason. And so they had a decent feud. And they had a match at WrestleMania 26, which was surprisingly very early in the card. It was in the middle of the show. It was
It was like third match.
It was a decent match. And in the end, Triple H won. He beat Sheamus. And, you know, it's a solid match. And, of course, again, he jobbed the very next pay-per-view, you know, after the big show. And what kind of annoyed me was the way they booked it. It could have been booked that way at WrestleMania. Sheamus attacked him backstage. So when the match started, you know, Sheamus had the advantage. And so he took out Triple H, and Triple H was gone for the rest of that year.
Yep.
And, you know, they built up Sheamus, and he was the king of the ring and two-time WWE champion. And then when Triple H came back, he started feuding Taker. They just completely dropped the Sheamus thing, just like the Taker being buried by Nexus. You know, you could say I took it too seriously, but no, I'm a wrestling fan. I take continuity very seriously.
I agree.
And, you know, the only mention they gave of Sheamus was Triple H. He just randomly pedigreed Sheamus through a table. I don't even remember how it happened. He just
I remember exactly how it happened because it pissed me off beyond belief. Was the rumors for that year were Triple H, Sheamus, the rematch, and Taker Barrett. Those were like the late fall, early winter rumors for those guys. Obviously, Taker came back. Hunter comes back at the same time. So it's obvious they're going at each other at WrestleMania. Hunter's cutting a promo, and Sheamus comes out. And the Sheamus side of the promo was great because Sheamus is like, how could you forget about me? I took you out. You haven't been back since. You know, and the Sheamus promo made a lot of sense. And then Triple H started throwing some punches at him and pedigreed him, and Sheamus was done after that. Yeah, it was like, okay, we never speak of this again.
And what pissed me off the most about his match with Taker was I thought, okay, I get it. You're fighting Taker because he retired your best friend, HBK. And so now I'm going to fight you and end your streak out of revenge for HBK. I thought it was going to be that. But instead, it was your typical Triple H BS where he's like, oh, well, I'm just going to fight you because there's nothing left for me to do here. Oh, there really? There's nothing left for you to do? So that guy that took you out, you don't got to get revenge? All the new guys like Wade Barrett and Alberto Del Rio and The Miz, even though I don't like The Miz, I'm just trying to be, you know, I'm trying to speak from a continuity standpoint. So all these new generation of stars are not worth your time. And the fact that Taker retired, you don't care about that. I just hated how Triple H just said, I'm fighting you not because you retired my best friend, not because I want to end the streak. I'm fighting you because there's nothing else left for me
to do.
When he said that was his own way of just burying the entire roster.
I remember that. Yeah, and it was like, ugh. So he loses to Taker and doesn't really surface again until he's revealed as the COO. And I think this is where you and I kind of differ on 2011. I think we're getting to that point right now. is revealed as the COO, which is fine because, you know what, behind the scenes, this is what's really going to happen, if it hasn't already. No one really knows the extent of, you know, Hunter and Vince right now, but that's fine. So, he makes Raw a super show, ends the brand extension, which is great.
Which still is going on right now.
What, the brand extension?
No, I mean the super show gimmick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still going on right now.
Yep. Yeah,
but really, if you want to to all you era fans out there, if you really want to say when did today's era start, you can start it right there. Because that brand thing had been going on since 2002. You know,
Nine
the fact that he ended it there. If you're going to say a new era started, it started right there. And that was around, that was like in the aftermath of the whole punk Money in the Bank thing, too. So whatever era you want to call it, it's nameless at the moment. I know some fans are saying reality era. We'll disagree there. But I think I will agree that, you know, if you want to say a new era started, it would be there when Triple H cut that promo.
Yep, which was fine. Referees the main event of SummerSlam between Punk and Cena. I gotta admit, I was hooked into what role he was gonna have. I was waiting for him to turn heel that entire match. So as far as an interest point of view, to me, he did a good job of gauging interest. Then it all goes to hell.
It
for
all goes
1 month.
It goes to hell. And you know, what they basically do is, you know, Punk wins, and then Kevin Nash powerbombs him, and Del Rio cashes in, which just, it makes it a whole clusterfuck, because the whole point of it was to put Punk over, and, you know, it's just one of those moments where it's like, really, like, do you really need to add the money to this?
Although Punk, you see, I thought Punk handled that well, because Punk's promo the next night, when he goes after Kevin Nash verbally, and it's one of the greatest destroyings of someone verbally that I've ever seen, I won't lie. Punk actually says it, like, you know what, I don't even mind what, you know, Del Rio did, because I've done it twice. I get it. I'll deal with him in due time. You know, I'm more pissed off. I want to know who sent you out to lay me out. So, I always thought they handled that right. You know, with Punk and the cash in, and you know why he was so going after Nash and not Del Rio,
but
right
the whole
away.
Nash,
you know,
further solidifies the whole friends of Triple H will always get a good position even if they don't deserve it.
And then
Kevin Nash in 2011, that's a match nobody wants to see.
Yeah,
it never happened anyway, and we ended up getting Punk Triple H. That match was at Night of Champions, that made me seriously consider if Vince Russo was working behind the scenes. That match was, I vaguely remember, I just remember that match had so many run-ins. It didn't make sense.
Yep.
There was a point in the match where I remember, because R-Truth and Miz, they did not want Triple H to win. They wanted Punk to win. And there was a point in the match where Punk had the pin, and then Truth broke it up. And it's like, wait a minute, you want Punk to win, right? Why did you break up the pin? It didn't make any sense.
The whole storyline was, if Punk would have beaten Hunter, Hunter was out as COO. So the thing was, Miz and Truth wanted Hunter out as COO, but they didn't like Punk either. So it was like, what was going to be the lesser of two evils? And then Kevin Nash comes out again during that match, which the rumors was it was going to be Nash, it was going to be Truth, it was going to be Miz at Survivor Series, and maybe one or two other guys against like a super team of like Punk, Rock, Cena, Triple H, and maybe one other guy. That obviously doesn't happen. Then you get Punk and Triple H putting over the Awesome Truth at the following pay-per-view, which I thought was phenomenal. And I still say to this day, if Truth didn't get suspended, they would have won at Survivor Series and gone on to bigger things.
Yeah, as far as the COO thing goes, there's still some confusion. There was some horrible writing there. To kind of rewind, CM Punk had his match against John Cena, Money in the Bank. That was CM Punk's last night. His contract was expiring that night. And so Punk's plan was to win the title. That way the company wouldn't have the belt anymore. And the stipulation also was, if Cena did not win, then he would be fired. So realistically speaking, if Punk would win, then he's gone because he's out the company. The title's gone because he took it with him. And Cena's gone because if he loses, he gets fired. And so that's what happens. So the very next night, Vince McMahon is supposed to fire Cena. And right before he fires him, that's when Triple H comes out and he basically says, you're not going to fire Cena. And he says, I'm here to inform you, the board of directors, that you're not acting within the best interest of the company. And he was like, I'm here to inform you that your abilities as COO are over. So at that point, Triple H was basically telling Vince that Mr. McMahon, his character, his power of being in charge of the company in terms of kayfabe is over. So at that point, they're saying that Triple H is in command. And then later on, he starts the Super Show gimmick, ending the brand thing. And then because of Triple H's horrible decisions and horrible booking, it starts this no-confidence angle where the roster is against him. And it was a, it was cool because it was kind of like a faction that didn't really have a name. You had Christian, who was still in his One More Match gimmick. You had Cody Rhodes, who was still wearing the mask. You had Dolph Ziggler, who was like U.S. champion, right?
Yep.
And he was still with Vicky Guerrero. And then you had Jack Swagger. So you just kind of had like this group of disgruntled heels. They
yeah,
didn't Rio, really have a name.
I think it was with them.
Yeah, yeah, it was. They were the main group of heels that were against Triple H, and then Alberto Del Rio joined them. It was kind of weird because Del Rio and Christian were acting like they were cool, when in reality they shouldn't be cool because Del Rio took them out and kind of helped, you know, Edge retire. But that's neither here nor there. And so basically, in the end, because of their lack of confidence against Triple H, Triple H is sort of removed from his position, and John Laurinaitis comes out. And he informs them not to worry because the McMahon is not going to be in charge anymore. He said that in his promo. I remember he said that. He said the McMahon is going to be in charge. And so he took charge of Triple H's position. And then John Laurinaitis does his little heel run. And then when his run is over, Vince McMahon fires him, which doesn't make sense because from a storyline standpoint, he lost his power. And what's confusing is they still refer to Triple H as the COO when he clearly lost that title. It's really one of those situations.
It was one of those things like, wait, what?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of one of those situations where they write the story and they kind of like forgot about their previous stuff. You know, it's kind of like the anonymous GM where it went on so long, they just kind of were like, you know what, just screw it.
They just didn't know where they were going with it, yeah.
Yeah, they just forgot.
Yeah, so, okay, so we got that. So we go into 2012, and we get the rematch with Taker. I guess that's the first order of business. Hell in the Cell, End of an Era. Match speaks for itself. Now he's playing COO again because he's got to play politics with Brock Lesnar. And Lesnar breaks his arm the night after Extreme Rules, and we go right into what I know is your favorite SummerSlam match of all time, by the way. Triple H, Lesnar, the Perfect Storm at SummerSlam 12.
I'm sorry, their matches are just boring. People think that I'm being like a jerk. Their matches are just boring. Lesnar's a great worker. I love Lesnar's matches.
Yeah.
I love his matches with Guerrero. I love his matches with Benoit. I still idolize his matches with Angle. I watch that match like almost every day. And Triple H can put on good matches too. But I don't know what it is. They just have no chemistry at all for me. Their matches are so slow-paced, and I just do not care. I remember trying to give it a chance when they did it at SummerSlam 2012, and I'm like, why are you having this feud that you should have had at SummerSlam like 10 years ago? And, you know, Jay, the owner of PWP, we constantly bash heads about this because he tries to attack Jeff Hardy and Bully Ray like, oh, I saw this in 2002. I'm like, we saw Brock versus Triple H in 2002, and his excuse is, well, Brock can draw more money. And I'm like, okay, well, outside of the money, it's still the same match from 10 years ago, and when I mentioned this to him, he has no answer to it. So their matches are so slow. The crowd was dead at SummerSlam. They were dead. They didn't care. And then they had a match.
Here's the thing. Let's take it match by match. Here's the thing with SummerSlam, and I have a different view on it. I looked at SummerSlam as it was, you know, you were kind of stuck up against the wall in a rock and a hard place. I'll tell you why. At the time, Lesnar had not signed his extension. So it was kind of obvious that this was going to be the match to set up his farewell, okay? Because he had a 1 year, like whatever the appearances was, and, you know, they really thought he was going to be gone after a year. So I get the whole, let's do the match with Hunter at SummerSlam. We'll have Lesnar go over, which I thought was great. Him getting Hunter to tap in the middle of the ring clean, I think, was the best thing. You know what? Let's make up for 2004. Let's make up for 2005, and I will tap for you clean. I thought that was phenomenal. I understood the fact that from a booking point of it, that, okay, Hunter will come back around WrestleMania time, want his rematch with Lesnar, get his revenge, and send Lesnar packing. I always understood that, okay? I was a little surprised at how bad the match was, but again, part of that was maybe Lesnar didn't care, maybe Hunter wasn't going to give it his all again because Lesnar wasn't going to be there much longer. So
you're talking
about
their Mania match?
No, I'm talking about SummerSlam.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm talking about SummerSlam. Mania has no excuse for being as bad as it was because
Lesnar
had his two-year contract extension in his pocket. Why are you not putting out better matches? You know,
the match was bad because it followed Taker.
Yeah, but so if that match could have followed anything, it was still going to be bad. That match was not a victim of the crowd. Because Taker Punk wasn't the Taker match from the last 3-4 years. It was a different
style
matter. Taker match.
It doesn't matter. Any match that follows Taker is going to kill the crowd. This has been consistent.
Yeah, but you know what, though? You know what, though? You could turn a show on mute and watch a match and say, you know what, that's a great match. And it
True.
Just sucks where it was placed in the card, okay? And then you can watch a match and you could see... Again, watch it on mute, and it's still a bad match.
Again,
you know,
the match was bad. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not defending the match at all. I thought it was a bad match, but there were a lot of things that hurt the match. You know, people laugh when I say this, but the absence of that 8-person tag, like, what was it, Funkadactyls and
yeah.
Tons of Funk versus Rhodes
yep.
Scholars and the Bellas.
That match
would bring actually,
the crowd down.
Yeah, that match would have. That would have tremendously helped because you could have put that in the middle between Punk Taker and Triple H Lesnar, calm the crowd down, and give the crowd something else to do. And not only the crowd, but the viewers at home, too. Because one of my favorite WrestleManias is WrestleMania 19. And I love Brock versus Kurt, but if you go back and watch that match, the crowd is dead. And it's like, why is the crowd dead? Because before that, it was Rock Austin. Before that, it
and
was Hogan McMahon. Before that, it was HBK Jericho. So it's like
right.
when you have all
but
these
right
great
there,
matches.
Right there, you just made my point. You're able to go back and watch that show and know that Lesnar Angle is a great match. You go back and watch WrestleMania 29, Triple H Lesnar, and all right, you want to say Lesnar got knocked a little loopy and maybe that affected it? All right, maybe. But that match is not good no matter where it was on that card.
Yeah, I think the worst part was the finish was the same. Not they did like the way he lost. Like so far, Lesnar has only had 2 losses, and both losses have involved a steel chair or steel steps.
To
me, that was very lazy booking. It was like they couldn't think of anything else to do.
Yeah.
But HBK was there, and I actually felt sorry for Heyman because. You know, those WrestleMania entrances are very long. Like, here's a guy that had to walk an entrance with Punk. And, you know, Heyman is very vocal, like any manager should be in his matches.
Yep.
And so he was very vocal in a match with Taker, and he you know, he interfered several times. And so after that match is over, he has to come out again with Lesnar.
Yeah, with Lesnar.
Yeah, you know, so it's one thing to, like, you know, say you manage, like, let's just say for the sake of argument, let's just say Triple H, Lesnar opened the show. You know, you have like 3 to 4 matches to go through. That gives Heyman some time to rest. So the fact that Heyman wasn't able to vocally, you know, be as invested, that also hurt the match. And HBK, you know, God bless him. I love HBK, huge HBK fan. But it seems like when he shows up, he doesn't really seem to care either. He was just sort of there as well. Like Triple H and Lesnar could have had a match, and Heyman and HBK didn't even need to be there. It still would have been bad, but they were just kind of they were distractions of the match is what I'm trying to say. They didn't really add much. I did not see their match at Extreme Rules, but I heard
the
it
match
was
at Extreme
better.
Rules is the best of the three.
Okay,
but again, it's like a 7 compared to like a 6 and a 4. It's not, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not that 9 or 10 compared to like an 8 and a 7. You know, if that makes any real sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So, okay, so now that we're past this, and you know, now the whole thing that he's doing for Curtis Axel, I think the key is going to be Monday night. And the key is going to be what they do Monday night because they're gonna work again together Monday night. you know, I understand everyone feels the first match was more about Triple H. It wasn't about Axel. And Axel's come off some good wins, you know, against Cena. He's got a couple against Cena. He's got a couple against on SmackDown. He faces Jericho this week. And, you know, he's coming into Raw Monday. He could make this kid a star. And supposedly he's a big supporter of him. So, I mean, if Triple H, if this is the remains of his legacy, and, well, not legacy, but the remains of his in-ring career, then you know what? I really don't have to really, I don't think there's much complaints to if he's going to make guys the way they're he's trying to help make Axel right now.
You know, right now, Triple H, for me, just for me personally, he's just kind of at a point where I'm like, why are you still here? And I don't mean that to be offensive to him. When I see Triple H, I think of movies like Can't Hardly Wait. I don't know if you guys have seen it's an old like high school comedy. And there's a point in the movie because I Can't Hardly Wait. It's like it's one of those generic high school comedies where the school they just graduated and having a party. And there's a point in the movie where this cool guy that was a senior like you know 5 to 6 years prior he shows up and. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, he's cool. Like, I remember you. Like, you were, like, star of the football team, and you got a good job now. But, like, but no one is asking the awkward question, like, so why are you here again? Like, why are you here? Because, like, you're, like, because he's, like, 23, and everyone there is, like, 17 or 18. So I see Triple H, and it's like, dude, just leave. And I don't mean that to be disrespectful. I feel like the longer you stay there, the more you're disrespecting your legacy because – it's over, dude. It's over. DX is over. HBK is retired. Rock has moved on. Austin's moved on. You've already wrestled Taker. You've already wrestled Lesnar. You've contributed all you can possibly contribute. It's done. Go home. Be a husband. Take care of your kids. This is why I respect Jeff Jarrett. And don't get me wrong. I have hate for Jarrett, too. But what I respect about Jarrett is he at least came to the realization that his time is up. He removed himself. Bischoff, too. I give Bischoff credit, too. They both removed themselves from TV. That wasn't Dixie's decision. They both removed themselves from TV. And they've been gone from TNA television for a very long time. In fact, they've been gone so long, I'm almost positive if they came back, it would actually be a positive reception. Because when you've been gone for so long, it's like, wow, when they come back, it feels special. But when you keep coming back again and again and again, we don't care. I don't care about you, Triple H. And it's not because I don't care about you because I don't like you. I don't care about you. It's because you're wearing out your welcome. You're like that cool guy from high school that graduated 5 years ago and you're still here. Why are you still here? Where does he go? Okay, here's a good question to think people that think I'm being mean. All right, after this Curtis Axel feud, where does he go? Who does he feud with?
Yeah. Yeah,
I've
asked
this question, no one can give me an answer. You know why you can't give me an answer? You can't give me an answer because there's nowhere for him to go because you have a new generation of superstars. His time is up. It's time for him
right.
to go.
I,
you know?
I have no problem with him taking a perfect plex on Monday.
Maybe he'll
I
take
really
a
count
don't. Out.
Yeah, right. All right, so that is Triple H. Took us 2 weeks to get there, and we still got some time, but... that is Triple H in a nutshell. Other retrospectives I would like to do, and I've spoken to you about this already, WCW. A Rock Austin one, which you kind of inspired today when you with that Austin Confidential clip and how some people are hypocritical about, you know, bashing Rock with Austin. I will, you know, we'll do something on that as well in the future. A couple of quick things we'll breeze through. Did you see Slammiversary?
Yeah, of course. It was a great show. Great show.
Okay. I didn't see it, but I read it online, and even from reading it online, it seemed like a good show. The only thing I've gotten from people that have seen it, and it's just everyone understands it was just weird, like you in a no-win situation is, I guess the AJ angle match is like, there was probably no right way to book a winner in that.
I would have booked a no contest or maybe a double count out or something. It's very weird because he's being inducted. He's the inductee,
yep.
So you don't want to have him lose. But AJ of this new gimmick, you don't want to have him lose either. So
right,
we'll have
right.
to see what they do. Like, what's the story going to be? You know, I think that
right.
I think that Angle and AJ, I think that Angle is going to be the Lex Luger of this, because when Sting was in his little crow thing, Luger was kind of like that voice of reason. He was the one
mm-hmm.
that kind of, you know, tried to get Sting. And, you know, don't people forget, you know, Sting, he got beat up a few times. Like, he didn't have a match. But, you know, it wasn't always him just destroying the NWO. I mean, Hogan
yeah.
and a few NWO guys, they attacked him a few times.
Yeah, they got him a few times.
Yeah, I think Angle is going to be the voice of reason. He's going to be the one that's going to eventually turn AJ back into the one that we know and love. I don't think this feud is over. They'll probably have another match in the future. We just got to kind of see where they go. But it was a good match, though.
Yeah.
I like AJ's
new
style.
Yeah, no, it was a good match. And, again, not killing it, but it was just it was one of those things where I was like, oh, okay, what do we do now exactly? So, especially with the angle at the end of Impact 2 weeks ago. But other than that, Slammiversary, great show. I guess Dixie Carter doesn't learn from her mistakes. The news, the big free agent signing, Quentin Rampage Jackson, formerly of UFC. Did we forget what happened to King Mo?
After that guy got knocked out, he just got took off
yeah.
TV. So.
Yeah. She's never going to learn. She's never going to learn. And it's stuff like this. And it's a shame because if you saw the other news today, Quentin Jackson gets signed, and a guy like Douglas Williams gets released.
Well, Douglas Williams, he's the head trainer at OVW.
Yep.
So him being released just means that him as a wrestler, his job is over. Also, Jesse Sorensen, he is released, but he has a backstage job as well. I'm not
right.
sure
Sorensen's
if
got,
he's
got a backstage job, but I don't know if you saw some of Williams' tweets. Williams made it out like he's gone.
Mm. Well, like he's going from the company?
Yeah, yeah. Sorensen, yeah, everyone was like, no, he took a backstage position about a month or so ago. But if you saw Williams' tweets today, Williams made it out like he's completely gone.
I was always a big fan of Williams. He actually had a really good match with Eddie Guerrero on the independent scene many years ago. Williams is a very I wouldn't say he was an underutilized talent. It was like he had a good run with the British Invasion, a forgotten-about tag team that was very good. He was a good X-Division champion, good worker. I loved his anti-X-Division reign where he was the champion. He didn't use any of the crazy high-flying moves. But, you know, after that run, he just kind of drifted. And, you know, he was definitely a good talent, you know, way better of a wrestler than, say, you know, a Wade Barrett. Although Wade Barrett would easily be a better talker, have more charisma.
Yeah.
But, you know, Doug Williams was a good talent, so it's unfortunate to see him let go. But, you know,
yeah.
that's kind of the nature of the business when you bring in a new talent, you know, particularly one of a big marquee MMA, UFC draw. You got to, you know, for every big fish you bring in, the little fish got to
yep.
go.
Little
just
fish got to go, yep. Yep. So that's, you know, that's definitely seems to be what happened here. And there's really not much else going on. I know no one looks like spoilers, but SmackDown looks like a good show this week. And if you've been wondering why Daniel Bryan's been the focal point of TV, is good reason. There's some word coming out late tonight that he is in line for a major main event push starting as early this summer, and there is talk that he may even be main eventing the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. So,
against who? Ryback?
Haven't seen who, but I've heard that. I saw some things today and early tonight. That
right, when you say main event push, are you talking like World Heavyweight title push or WWE title push?
I didn't see anything as far as which belt. All I saw was that it's going to be a main event push, and he's going to be main eventing some pay-per-views over the next few months. So, you know what? That match Monday night was phenomenal with him and Ryback. I would take that again.
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing Daniel Bryan and Ryback feud. And
yeah.
It's got nothing to do with Daniel Bryan per se. The only reason I would like to see them feud is because it's been so long since we've had two new guys feuding for a WWE title. Two new
yeah.
faces, you know. Because, like, say what
yeah.
you want about Del Rio, because I don't like him, but when Del Rio and Punk, when they were feuding back in 2011, that was, like, the first time two new guys were feuding over WWE titles. So
yep.
I would like to see that, just so, you know, it'll be different, you know. It's just a breath of fresh air, so.
Mm-hmm. And the only other thing that I've seen is that He is staying a face.
Oh, fans aren't going to boo him anyway. So, you're going to be turning the heel. So.
Yeah. So, and, you know, CM Punk, it does not look like it's a bait and switch for the pay-per-view. It looks like it's a go, and he's going to work Jericho. So, you know, with that said, we'll see where that goes. With that said, I think we're going to end the show right there. Toph, you got anything in closing?
Oh, no, good show tonight, guys. Thanks for listening.
Yep. No problem. Yep. Thank you, everyone. I'm John, and till next week, we'll see you later.